delighted that you have found the Mindset Mental Meets podcast. I'm Angela Cox, your host and indeed the Mindset Mentor, and I'll be interviewing executives and founders at the top of their game to find out what lies beneath. I want to know what makes people proud, how they define success, what holds them back, and indeed what drives them forward. This is authentic and natural conversation with the best in the business. So listen in, enjoy, and if you love what you hear, please do leave a review. And now, over to today's guest. Hello and welcome to the podcast. Now, today I am very excited because I've got one of my, well, a lady who has become a very, very good friend of mine, the gorgeous Holly Joint. Now, Holly is over in the UAE where she heads up digital transformation for a leading bank. And we like to refer to Holly as Digital Holly, which I think is really cool because it kind of humanizes the whole tech space, which Holly works really well in. She's also a mum of two gorgeous children and a wife. And she has done the most amazing things throughout the years, you know, which I'm sure we'll talk about. Worked in brilliant organisations, including Accenture. She studied at Oxford. I mean, she is just the bee's knees. And she's there at the moment, having just come back from a run, and she'll be off to play tennis after we've done this. She is a force of nature. Holly, welcome. How are you?
Oh, my goodness. That was just so lovely. I think we could probably stop there. I feel very happy after listening to that. How nice are you?
You are a badass, Holly. You are a badass. Now, you've just been saying it's really hot over there and it's November here in the UK. Tell us about the weather because, you know, we've got to make me feel jealous before we start.
Well, actually, it's not too hot. It's the low 30s. The humidity is dropping. We started to get a few clouds in the sky. It's all lining up to be a beautiful winter.
Oh, you lucky, lucky lady. I am so jealous of you right now. And obviously, you're sitting there having just gone for a run. I know that fitness is something that you take very seriously. But tennis, we haven't talked about tennis before.
I love tennis. That is definitely me time. It's kind of the, I say it's the only social life I really have. So we play on a Wednesday night with a coach and a couple of other ladies, and he gets very annoyed because we spend more time talking than hitting the ball. But it's just a lot of fun and a good run around at the same time, and good to get some aggression and energy out whacking the ball.
You're going to have to teach me that when you come over and we get together, because it's not something I've ever played before. So, yeah, that's something that you'll be able to show me. Now, we're going to talk today about your proudest moments. I can't wait to see what you're going to say, because I know that there have been many, because we've been talking for a good couple of years now and you've done some amazing things. But you can only pick three. And let's have a go with the first one. What have you got for me?
Well, you said to me that it was very easy.
Just lulling you into a false sense of security there, Holly.
So difficult to think about. So my first one is going to sound a little bit perverse, but it is fitness related. It's coming last in an ultra marathon.
Oh, I love that. I don't think anybody else has ever said that before, coming last. Feels like there's some vulnerability in there. Come on, tell us a little bit more about that.
So there's a little bit of a backstory there. So back in 2019, in August, I was in the UK and I did a half marathon. I'm not a fast runner. I'm a pretty slow runner, but I did a good time for me, 2 hours and 15 minutes, something like that. So it was quite chuffed. And I'd been reading a lot about ultra marathoners that year. And a friend happened to be talking to me about a company in Hong Kong that did organized ultramarathons in Asia. And so I was sort of interested and casually browsed the website and had a little look and thought, oh, maybe this is something I'll do in 2020 or 2021. I can work myself towards it. There was an ultra marathon in 5 weeks' time in Kazakhstan.
Oh my God, 5 weeks after. How much bigger than a half marathon is an ultra?
So this was 100 kilometres. A half marathon is 21 kilometres. So there's some stupidity in the story as well, because obviously I wasn't trained at all for a half marathon. Sorry, an ultra marathon. I didn't have the gear, because there's a lot of gear you need to buy. You know, you need poles, you need a vest to put all your food and everything else in, and all your fluid. So I had to buy all the gear. Had no idea. And I was also a bit injured after the half marathon. So the first bit of my training and getting ready was actually resting for 10 days because I had a calf injury. Anyway, I also had the option of signing up for 60 or 100K and went for the 100K.
Of course you did.
So full stupidity. So I headed off to Kazakhstan, and most of the other people were coming from Hong Kong, and I got to the airport first of all, and then all these people arrived, and I knew exactly who they were, that they were on, you know, ultra marathoners,
because they were so
lithe, and they were all wearing t-shirts of these ultra marathons that they had been in before. And there's a book by a guy called Bruce Chatwin that's called What Am I Doing Here? And it was one of those moments. What on earth am I doing here? Anyway, set off. The first marathon, I didn't come last on. I came about, it's very hilly. It's in the, not exactly in the mountains, in the steppes, in the sort of foothills of the mountains. So it's very hilly. I came third last in the first marathon. The second day, I really, really fell behind everyone. There were some very technical bits where you go along a ridge, and it was an out and back. And so there were, you know, these fast people, you know, coming back towards me. And I knew that I still had another couple of hours just along that ridge. That second day was incredibly tough. I spent the whole day pretty much on my own in the middle of nowhere. But the scenery was beautiful. And I was in extraordinary pain, because having done a marathon the day before, my body wasn't fit. But I've been reading a lot about what ultramarathoners did when they're in pain. And that's actually about leaning into the pain. And so apparently your brain goes into overload when you keep saying this hurts so much and using a lot of expletives around the pain rather than trying to distract yourself from it. So I was trying all these kind of techniques. And the reason why I feel so proud is really around that second marathon, because it was getting dark. I was so far behind everyone else. The marshals were saying to me, there's a road nearby. We've got a vehicle. Come and get on the vehicle and we'll take you back to camp. You can drop out. That's fine. And I feel so proud of myself, because I kept on going and I was absolutely determined, despite the pain, the kind of loneliness of being out there in the middle of nowhere on my own. Also the sort of slightly humiliating feeling of being that person that people were trying to hoover up. And so I'm so proud that I made it through that second stage. And then the third stage was only a half marathon. And there were just such wonderful people. All these lithe, scary people were actually just rooting for me, and they were cheering me like I was the first place person. And when I ran into camp with my body completely falling apart, you know, they really treated me like I was the winner of the race. And that experience of coming last and not being the best at something and, you know, just having to be quite humble about it was, I think, one of the greatest experiences of my life.
You know what, it's so compelling and inspiring, because you've just said, you know, not being the best at something, but my brain immediately said to me then, well, she was the best because you weren't experienced in it, and yet you got through it, you managed your mindset through it, and you finished it. You know, that resilience and that grit and determination to see something through. I mean, that is an amazing lesson for kids as well, isn't it? That idea of celebrating being last, because actually you've put yourself out there in a position of, you know, way outside of your comfort zone. And there is an argument to say that you were the best on the day because everybody else was experienced and you weren't.
It's really interesting you say that, because actually my kids, you know, I do quite a lot of, you know, races in inverted commas, and my kids always say, you know, did you come first, or did you beat so-and-so? And so I think, yeah, it is a great example for them to kind of know that you can take part in something and know that you can come last and still feel really proud about it.
Yeah. It's incredible. I'm interested to hear more about the self-talk and the mindset, because I've got these visions of you standing on this ridge shouting the expletives out into the ether at the top of your voice. But how did you find that deep resilience to keep going when I'm sure every fibre of your being at times was telling you to stop?
I think actually a lot of it was about my children. A lot of it was thinking how proud they would be. I mean, they were pretty young at the time, but, you know, it's something that I can talk to them about when they're older. And also just, you know, sort of going inside yourself and knowing, you know, everyone says it's more mental than physical, and just reminding yourself of that it is mental, that it's your brain that's telling you to stop. And I think, you know, all that reading I'd done around ultramarathoners and amazing stories of what different people have done sort of helped me realize that, you know, whether you're right at the back of the pack or the front of the pack, you know, you go through a lot of these mental challenges, and that it seems to be, you know, when you dig deep and believe that you have the mindset to do it, that you can actually do it.
And you did. It's incredible. I'm sitting here wondering what Carl's response, Carl, your lovely husband, what's his response when you come home and you go, oh, darling, I've just signed up for an ultra marathon.
I was slightly more consultative than that. Not much. I think he, you know, he got together with me knowing that I had done a lot of traveling around on my own. You know, I backpacked around China on my own, and, you know, I've pretty much traveled all my life. I went to boarding school at the age of 8. I was flying on my own out to Belize as a child. So I think my husband has always known that I have this bit of me that sort of has a need for adventure that needs to get satiated every now and then. So he accepts that.
Yeah, there's adventure, and then there is signing up for an ultra marathon when you've never done one before. It is very inspiring, and I think it is so lovely to hear somebody celebrating coming last. I mean, if there's anything that can inspire a generation, it's that message. You don't have to be first to be the best. I'm taken from that. So what's the second one then, if that's the first?
Well, the second one is maybe slightly an odd one, but I'm really proud of, I guess it was a moment in 2020 where I was under a huge amount of pressure, and I managed to completely reframe the situation that I was in. I think 2020 was a pretty horrendous year for a lot of people, and I did a bit of reframing in about April last year that I think just changed the whole year for me.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more then. What's the reframe?
So we went into lockdown quite early on in Abu Dhabi. Schools shut, I think, at the end of February. And I think sort of second week of March, the office closed. And then we went into quite a restrictive lockdown sort of in the early summer. And so that whole home learning piece, that whole having to work from home was all sort of piling together, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this, into something that was very, very intense. And I was working long hours, and I felt a lot of pressure from the other mums who were all on WhatsApp and, you know, sort of doing catch-up homework at weekends and things like that. And I felt like my kids were missing out on a lot of things. And you know, I was struggling there because we live in the UAE, they do Arabic, for example. There was no way that I had space to help them with their Arabic because it would have required
Arabic,
me.
Holly.
No, I don't. To my shame, this is the problem. Had I spoken Arabic, I could have helped them, but it would have required me to do the whole lesson with them. And, you know, I was working late nights. I just didn't have the time for it. And I just felt all that pressure rising inside me, that stress rising inside me. And I started becoming shouty mummy. And I've never been a shouty mummy. I really try not to be angry. And I was just becoming this person that I didn't want to be. And then something struck me at some point, and I don't know what it was, but it just, I suddenly remembered what my goals had been for the year. And one of my goals had been to spend more time with my children. And I suddenly realized that I had this incredible opportunity to be with my children. It was becoming very clear that they weren't going back to school, you know, for the next several months. And rather than seeing it as an enormous burden, I started seeing it as a huge opportunity. And once you get that clarity, I was able to do some really simple things. For example, I have a daily meeting with my team at 8 o'clock in the morning, and it was such a huge area of stress. It was so important to me to check in with them every day. But actually 8 o'clock was when my kids had to go online. Yes. And I had to get them both on Zoom calls as well. And then I realized that my team were also parents. And yeah, that, of course, that they were suffering from the same pressure as me. And so it was just, okay, we can shift that call to 8:30. No great loss there. Just by doing that, releasing some pressure from all of us and me being able to, instead of in a stressful way, in a really relaxed way, get everyone onto their morning calls on time. And also just letting things go. You know, I'm quite competitive by nature. I have quite an academic background. But actually saying, it's okay if my kids just do reading and maths for the next few months, that is an achievement. That is brilliant. And I can drop everything else because I can't compete with people who don't have the same other demands on their time as me. So I think maybe it's a bit of an odd one, but I feel very proud of how we got through that as a family. My husband, I should say, was starting up a business at the time. So just as we were going into lockdown at the beginning of May, he started his business. And so there was just this opportunity for us all to go into meltdown. And I think we had been. And that sort of stopping, reframing and seeing it as an opportunity to be together as a family. And rather than worry about music and Arabic, worry about, you know, building dens and doing silly
baking
stuff.
And
yeah, I'm not the cook in the family.
Well, no, because Carl's the cook, isn't he? Just tell us a little bit about Carl's business, because it's super cool.
Yeah, so he has a business called Serves Gourmet, which is a food business. So he does sort of wholesome family meals, which he delivers in a dish. It's fresh food, you put it straight in the oven and then straight onto the table. So very, very easy, and our family live off the food.
I mean, it's just what every sort of working family need, isn't it? Is a chef to come and deliver home cooked food. It's like, oh,
yeah,
brilliant idea. I love it.
Kept us going.
And the children are relatively young, aren't they? So how old's Jemima?
Just turned 8, Halloween baby.
So it's quite a difficult age group because it's not necessarily an independent one where they can self-study. Like my children were relatively independent around that. But at that age, you've got to kind of supervise quite a lot, haven't you? So I get what you're saying, and what I'm hearing from you is not only the reframe about the opportunity rather than seeing things as a burden, but also what you've done there is adapted to the circumstances and realised that your old ways of working and the old routine isn't necessarily going to just shoehorn into this new set of circumstances. And I think that ability to adapt in uncertainty is a lesson for all of us, really, because so often we try to just keep doing what we've always done, but the sands that we're on are completely different and it doesn't work. And it's just like flogging a horse, really. But you've been able to recognize that and make the adaptations that obviously probably helped your people as well, as much as it helped you.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I think for the kids as well, I think it was so much better for them because, you know, it created this much happier environment and actually gave them an opportunity to be very creative. And they did get a lot of independence because we weren't available for them. And so they had to learn how to do things. I'm sure like a lot of other kids, you know, my daughter's now a whiz on Zoom and it's quite frightening. But I also think, you know, from the point of view of her education, she had to manage and do stuff and on her own. And she had to learn to manage time. And she's still not great at that because she's a chatterbox. But but I think actually, you know, she learned some amazing life skills. And so that was part of it as well for me going, actually, it doesn't matter if she doesn't finish this page of writing and just letting those things go a bit.
Yeah, and actually, if we look at all of the children now collectively, it's the same when they're babies, isn't it? And we're all worried about who's walking first. But by the time they're two, they can all walk. It's that same thing. There might be a few bits where kids have fallen behind in certain areas, but, you know, get them back to school for 6 months and they all get back to where they need to be. So I think that letting go message is a really good one for us all to think about. I really like that because both of these are very different and they're quite small in a way, you know, in terms of you're not talking about massive grand feats, but actually the learning in them is so transferable into lots of different aspects of life. So I think the lessons from that one in particular it's just brilliant. So what's the third one then?
So the third one, maybe I've cheated a bit on the word moment and extended it out a bit because a bit longer. The third one is actually the whole arc of my career. So that's 20 years. So, you know, I was kind of thinking about it. I was trying to think of, you know, one particular thing that I'm proud of. But I think the thing that I am proud of is, you know, I started out, as you said, at Accenture, where I could have had quite a linear kind of career up a ladder. Mm. And really what I've done is more of a roller coaster. We were talking about roller coasters beforehand.
Yeah.
You know, I think of my career as a bit more of a roller coaster. I've done some very, very different things. And I do think it's important to be intentional about your career, but I think also it's important not to be too intentional sometimes because I think you have to be open to slightly crazy opportunities. And so, for example, I was working at Standard Chartered and the CEO I was working for, this was when I first came to the Middle East, said, I'm going to Qatar to set up a bank. Do you want to come and work for me? And, you know, that was one of those pivotal kind of moments where I went, no, I don't want to go from Dubai to Qatar. You know, I've got this wonderful life here. But actually the opportunity to go and start up a bank was really incredible. And that stepping away, I guess, from a sort of well-established blue chip company to go and work for the startup was quite a risk. And from there, you know, I did things like I was program director for the World Cup bid, the Qatar 2022 World Cup bid, which is actually happening next year.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I think about that first conversation that I had with the CEO of the bid, who now heads up the Supreme Committee for the World Cup. And he was talking about peace in the Middle East. And when we were doing the bid, it was sort of viewed as, you know, we were the outsiders. It was very sort of, people were laughing. A World Cup in Qatar, no, that's not possible. And that whole vision has come to life. And so I think I feel very proud that I've not let myself be comfortable.
Never, Holly.
Most of my career has been about transformation or startups. And I think in a way to be authentic in that career, I've had to change myself and be uncomfortable myself. And so when I look at that overall journey that I've been on, I do feel proud.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised you do because it's a fascinating journey. You've not spoken about much of it. I mean, you work for Peter Jones, didn't you, the Dragon's Den in the UK?
Yeah, so he was in Qatar and he was looking to set up a business there. And it was one of those chance meetings where I kind of literally did my elevator pitch. And he said, I like you. I'm a good judge of character. Do you want to come and work for me? And I was like, okay. So I set up a business from scratch for him and ran it for 3 years and had nearly 200 staff working for me there. It was an incredible journey. But again, you know, it was something that was high risk, but a wonderful, wonderful, enriching experience.
You talk about high risk, but what I know of you is, and you mentioned it with the ultra running, you do the research, you do the kind of due diligence, if you like, before you go into these situations to make sure that you've considered the risks and that you can mitigate them. So I know that that's part of you. The digital Holly bit for me is fascinating because the area that you work in, there are so few women to start with that are working in that area. And it's becoming more and more now. But how do you manage, I suppose, to work in that area, but also then in a country which has got its own cultural aspects as well that you need to take into consideration? How do you do all of that and thrive in the way that I see you thriving?
Wow. I think the digital bit is really about learning and always being open and being excited about emerging technologies. And so, you know, you talked about how I do my research. You know, I read around, I talk to people, I watch stuff, I find out as much as possible because, you know, the landscape changes so fast, but then in a way, it doesn't change that fast. My first job at Accenture, my first role was in the e-commerce innovation center. And in many ways, what I was doing there is very similar to some of the things that I'm doing today. And I remember, you know, some of the technologies that we were talking about in that time, you know, things like location-based services or online dating or smart fridges. You know, those were just sort of early ideas in those days that actually, you know, smart fridges are still sort of stumbling into the world. You know, they've not had a full adoption yet.
But it's, I don't even know what a smart fridge is. What is a smart fridge?
You know, it's a fridge that can order your milk for you when you run out and that kind of thing. But, you know, they haven't quite got there in terms of the sort of use cases and usefulness basically for people, but the technology is out there. So I guess that kind of answers the digital piece. In terms of the cultural side, I think it's so interesting because there's obviously a culture of the countries that I've lived in, but also these countries are melting pots of lots of different nationalities. And so, you know, it's very normal to work in a room full of people from lots of different cultures. And so, you know, you do have to be very open to where other people are coming from. You know, one example I have with a friend of mine who's Canadian, I say, you know, would you like a cup of coffee? She'll say, sure. I'm like, does that mean you want one or you don't want one? You have all these little things that, you know, can cause confusion. And so, you know, having an open mind and being curious about people is the thing that I think helps the most. I find it fascinating. I'm so interested in people and where they come from.
And I mean, that, what you just said there about being open, and we talked about perspectives earlier, being open to different perspectives could be with someone in your own family. I mean, it is just that element of human connection that actually so many of us don't realize that there is a perspective other than ours that is worth listening to and worth noting. Because so often we're running that assumption program that we think we know what everybody else thinks and we think we know what everybody else means and coming from our own map of the world. So I guess when you're dealing with different cultures, you've got to be mindful of that. But also when you're, you know, just with your family at Christmas time and, you know, people are rubbing you up the wrong way, it's the same lesson.
Yeah, I'm not always so good with family and not always so patient.
But he is.
but yeah, I think, you know, just being aware and you know, this is why diversity matters so much, because with that diversity, with all those people around, with all those different backgrounds, then you really have the opportunity for innovation. It really does make an impact.
So if you're thinking about your career arc and all the different roles that you've had and all the different places that you've worked, what's been one of the things that you've had to work on and develop the most for you as, you know, Holly, the woman?
Well, that's a very good question. I think as someone who drives change and transformation and is also very, you know, I'm very driven, I can be a bit of a bulldozer. I can I may have been described in the past as someone, you know, like I'm like a dog with a bone. And I've had to really learn to not do that. You know, that often the change journey takes time, and that it really takes time to take people along with you. And it can be enormously frustrating, but it's probably the most important lesson that I've learned, particularly in this part of the world where things can take time.
Patience, then.
Yes, Angela, I think that's something that
we passed on my way. Oh, I still haven't learned that lesson, Holly. I still haven't learned that lesson. Like-minded people. That's how we got on so well.
Definitely.
So three really different lessons and things coming out of all of them. I think the bit that I'm taking, which has really kind of struck me, is this idea that you don't have to be first to be the best. I just love that. I think you could have a book that is called that, Holly, and you would inspire millions. So I guess thinking about all of the lessons that you've learned and this amazing journey that you've had, and I mean, I know so much more about you than we've even covered today in terms of all the different places you've lived and all the experiences you've had, and you truly are courageous in every sense of the word. I'm interested then in terms of how you see success. And I always ask people, what's the secret to success in their view? How would you answer that one?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I mean, I think it's first worth saying that I see success as a journey rather than a destination. And maybe that's come out by me talking about the arc of my career. But I think one of the most important things to me along that journey, and we've touched on it already, is really about the curiosity piece. And it'll probably be no surprise to you, but it's curiosity first and judgment second. I don't always get that right. I'm not going to pretend that I don't jump in with judgment. But I think if you're, and this is something you and I have talked about in the past, I think if you're curious about someone, you can be a lot more empathetic about them. You can understand why they behave like they do. And that's kind of the superpower. I think if you're curious, new and interesting opportunities open up to you. I think also that you don't come from a place of scarcity. You don't come from a place of fear. You come from a place of abundance. And it may sound a bit cliched, but I think that's something that's really important as well. So, yeah, I think curiosity before judgment.
Curiosity before judgment. And then you said kind of relinquishing the scarcity mindset and moving into an abundance one. That second one that you've just said, I know from experience of working with many people from many different backgrounds, is a real challenge, because there's a high percentage of people who have the lack mindset. Is that something you have to work on, and how do you work on it? Or is it something that's just inherent, would you say, for you?
I think there's a bit of both. I think I naturally am curious. That's how I've always been. And I see it with my children. They're extremely curious little people as well. But I think with that comes some self-awareness. Mm-hmm. And with that self-awareness, then you sort of look at yourself and think, well, how can I grow more? How can I learn more? How can I understand more, you know, to get me through this situation?
And I guess then from that, the more you learn about people, the more curious you are, the more you open up the trust in relationships. So you start to get more back. I guess that then moves you towards an abundance mindset as well, because you stop seeing everything as threatening.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And I just think it's so important in a corporate environment, because actually, if you think of it in a sort of big picture sense, having a sense of abundance is so important, because whether you're selling potatoes or banking products, actually what you want is abundance. And so, you know, from an economic view, from a macro view, abundance is incredibly important to everyone's success. Yeah. And so the scarcity mindset is kind of counterintuitive to being successful for anyone.
I really like that as a way of thinking. So this idea actually that curiosity, and the more curious you can become, actually starts to stifle the judgment that we all have. It's a part of all of us, starts to stifle that. And then it opens up space for abundance, because it diminishes threat. It diminishes that sense of competition or other people being better than.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's another superpower, I think.
Yeah, totally. And all it takes is questioning, finding out, asking more, and kind of crushing the ego a little bit so that you've got space for that. And so the success mindset is about that, but I also like what you say about it being a journey. So it's the idea of continuous progress, as opposed to you've hit the mark now, perfect, nothing more to be done, because actually we never really get there, do we?
No, and I hope not, because I think that, you know, the journey is the bit that's enriching and magical and fun.
Yeah, and continual, and so it should be. So, I mean, you know, Oxford student, and I know that you did amazingly well, and then this glittering career, this courage to just take risks and go to different places that many of us would go, no, I can't do that. Beautiful children, you've got an amazing husband, and you know, the world's your oyster in terms of where you're going. But with those lessons that you've learned along the way and what you've been able to share today, the world really is yours for the taking, isn't it?
Well, that's lovely for you to say. It doesn't always feel like that, but it's very, very lovely to hear someone say that.
That's the human Holly coming through right there, in terms of, it doesn't matter what's been on the journey, does it? And how many wins we've had along the way, it's still something that you have to encourage yourself forward. And that humility that's at the centre there is important, isn't it, to that continual growth?
Yeah, absolutely. You've got to stay with your feet on the ground all the way through.
Oh, yeah, that was a very British finale there, Holly. You can take the girl out of Britain.
Absolutely.
Feet on the ground. Anyone would think you were from the north as well, but you're not. Oh, do you know what? One of these days, Holly, you will come over to the UK and we will meet at last. Because yes. It's been, how long has it been? About 4 years or something that we've been like cyber buddies.
I can't remember, but yeah, I think maybe 2016, 2017, yeah.
Like forever. And you've been to the UK, but we've never managed to meet up, but we will.
We will do it. We will. Well, Chichester's a lovely place, so I will.
I keep saying, move to Chichester, Holly, move to Chichester. She's having none of it. It was an absolute pleasure, and I'm so happy that you've shared your proudest moments with everybody that doesn't know you. And I'm sure some of your loved ones will be listening to this as well and feeling that pride for you. So thank you for being so open. I knew that you would be. And no doubt we will meet soon.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. It's amazing to be able to talk about it.
And thank you to the technology for being kind to us. Because it's not always like this when we meet online.
Absolutely.
So have a wonderful time playing tennis, and I will speak to you again soon, no doubt. And I'm sure some of our listeners will be in touch with you on LinkedIn to find out more about you.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Angela. It's always lovely to speak to you.
So, just like that, we're at the end of the podcast. I hope you've enjoyed your time listening today, and a big thank you from me for taking the time. I'd really love it if you would be able to leave a review, because it really does help us to get noticed. And if you haven't already, why not subscribe, and then you never miss an episode. I wish you a lovely rest of the day, whatever it is that you're doing, and I hope that you stay safe and well.